honoring veterans from sea to shining sea. You're listening to Hometown Heroes with Paul Leffler, brought to you by this local station and its sponsors, and presented everywhere, on the air and online, by Provident Payments, one of the fastest-growing payment consultants in America. Connect today at providentpayments.com.
Welcome back to Hometown Heroes and our visit with 96-year-old Leroy Tucker. He served in Europe and later the Pacific in World War II with the 86th Infantry Division, specifically the 332nd Field Artillery Battalion.
When we got into Germany, I think we crossed six rivers. Our infantry guys did have on pontoon bridges. They had to build the bridges to get across. We ended up down there in Ingolstadt.
You're only there for a few months.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But you saw plenty of action still.
Yeah.
You guys had work to do. They had this... The rear pocket needed to be cleaned up, right? You guys were involved in that?
Yeah. Me and Wiley and Jacoby and old Jim Dowd, we volunteered as infantry off of the guns. They come by and we weren't firing or anything, so they said, Germans are trying to put a ring, a defensive ring around that Ruhr Valley because that was our big industrial plant for trying to ship stuff to the Russian front, I guess.
Yeah.
Stuff like that. So they come by and said, we don't have enough guys to stop them, so we need some volunteers to go through the center of that pocket, the Ruhr Valley in there,
yeah,
and just cut their forces in half. So we decided, well, we'll be infantry, so we volunteered to go through there, and we got into a firefight one night, and one of our tanks sitting out there in the middle of burning. They'd hit it with a rocket, and a big hotel building got on fire, and it looked like the whole sky lit up, burning. And
Ready to change your mind at that point?
We started marching. We was marching in there, and there was a big hedgerow there it was pretty high. But we could see places through it and everything, so it was dark other than that light. We didn't want to get out there in the light too much, and we was there trying to see where everybody else was at around there. We heard a noise behind us, and somebody turned around, and there would come five Germans with their hands on their helmets like this. They throwed their guns down and was giving up. They were right by. We didn't even know they'd behind us there for a while.
Well, there's a lot of things I have to ask you now. So first of all, didn't anybody tell you you're never supposed to volunteer for anything in the Army?
That's one of the first thing our sergeant told him, don't volunteer for nothing. Do what you're supposed to and don't volunteer for nothing.
And so here you're over there for a while. You're firing these shells and the artillery, somewhat safe compared to the infantry on the front lines.
Yeah.
And then they come through and say, hey, we need some suckers to go out here and march between German troops and try to cut a line.
Yeah.
What made you volunteer for that?
I don't know. Just they said, like our sergeant used to tell us, don't do what you're told. Don't ask no questions.
Did you guys talk about it all together, or just one person do it and everybody did it, or how'd
that
happen?
Yeah, when we decided, well, we're not doing anything right now, let's go help them out.
Now, you'd had some training in basic way back when infantry stuff?
Yeah, right.
So what were you armed with?
Well, all we had then was a few hand grenades and a little carbine, 30 caliber carbine.
Didn't even have an M1?
No.
Did you know what you were supposed to do?
Yeah, we knew. They just mostly get through there and control the area so they couldn't work back and forth with each other.
And so you talked about it. You see a tank burning. You've got the hotel building burning. You got your eye out for German troops.
Down there behind us.
They're behind you, so they could have shot you and you would have never known.
Never known.
How many of you guys were there?
About five or six of us. All of us was almost from the same gun, you know.
If they had fired on you, you wouldn't have had time. They would have gotten you all before you knew what happened, probably.
Yeah, it depends. If they'd have seen us maybe off at a distance and started shooting at us, sometimes that happens too.
But these guys walk up behind you and say...
They knew the war was about over, so they just kind of saving themselves, I think, more than anything else. No telling how they got up there.
That had to be a little unnerving for you, though, to realize they'd been there.
Oh, yeah. Because, shoot, if they'd had the right kind of a gun, they could probably got us all in one gun. Right after the war ended, we had a job rounding up Germans that was hiding out, didn't want to give up. They was hiding out in the forest areas and places like that. So me and Herky Palacios and Wiley, and we went into this town, like village-like, and they had like a fence, you might say, around it. And then they had the barns and their horses and everything were in there. And they had a plaza out there where They got together, I guess, for their get-togethers, and we went into the main gate. Guy come out to meet us, see what we wanted. We told him what we was looking for. Those guys, like, they have any soldiers hiding out here or anything? And they said no, and about the time they told us no, the door opened to a building over there, and here come a couple women out with big trays of food going toward the barn. So we said, how about over there? What's that? What are they doing? And of course, we knew right away what was happening. Those guys are hiding out in the barn over there. And when they yelled out in German, and those guys come out, there's about four or five of them hiding out in that barn over there like that.
Mm-hmm.
So we just pick them up, put them on the truck, take them and dump them off where they're holding them, a bunch of them like that. And then one town we went through, the sergeant said, I want you to take a bazooka rocket and go down to that turn in the streets down there, Four Corners, and dig you a foxhole, dig it deep, because we got noted that there's one of them tiger tanks coming through the town, down through the main street. So me and another guy took the bazooka, and we went down there to dig us a foxhole. And we almost got there until a guy come up and told us he'd had orders come down and tell us to come back to the gun, that everything's okay now. And we said, well, what happened? And he said, well, that tiger was coming down the main street, one of them fighter bombers come through there with a 500-pound bomb and landed right on top of it. He ain't no more tiger.
Relief for you, huh?
Yeah.
But when you got that news, hey, the Third Reich has surrendered to the Allies.
Oh, that was pretty fun. Good feeling to know that it was all over with, and all we had to do was clean up and come home. But it wasn't that really that way, because after we got 30 days back home, our was the first full division to come back from Germany. Get 30 days, and then we got back to Camp Goober, Oklahoma, and was headed out to land on Japan proper, the place where we were supposed to land, just kind of a flat area. And the colonel told us that they had more kamikaze airplanes hid away in caves and plus that they had when the war started, that they planned on using against our ships when we got ready to land there. They just dive them into the, said they put the pilot in there, they seal it. He couldn't get out if he wanted to ditch a thing. If he did, he blew his own airplane up.
What do you think would have happened to you if those bombs weren't dropped?
Probably more killing than what did happen before it was over with. Because their military didn't want to give up.
But you guys are near Midway when you get this news.
Yeah.
So now you know you're not going to have to fight.
So we went on. They said, we won't turn around because we may have to do something else. And they took us on down there and dumped us off their lady on the in the Philippines. Some of the Japanese were out in the jungle. They didn't know the war was over. So our infantry guys, some of them would go out every day and go down through the jungles and find their camps and things and bring them in and tell them the war was over. Then we ended up on the big island of Mindanao.
Let me ask you something else that's not, you know, sometimes it requires a little thought, but I'm just interested in your genuine answer. So you just turned 96. You're still doing your riding lawnmower out back and staying pretty active here. But you've got a lot of life to look back on, 96 years worth.
Yeah.
When you reflect on everything that you've done, everything you've been through, is there something that you would say you're most proud of or you're most thankful for?
My family, I think. Because they've all done all right. And I can't say that I couldn't think of anything any better that makes me feel good anyway.
His wife of 68 years, his two children, his five grandkids, and five great-grandchildren would tell you that feeling is mutual. And here to prove it is his daughter Judy, an accomplished softball coach and teacher at the same school her dad rode the bus to all those years ago.
He's always been a dad that you learn by doing with him. He taught us when we were raised on the ranch to give a good hard day's work, that you give your boss and for that part your country, you always work hard and you give it your best no matter how small the job was or how big the job was. And there's always I always felt like he was a teacher. My brother and I started out and he started out in teaching, but that love of that farming that dad had, he always taught us to respect the land and respect the people. And I think that's why I appreciate him, as he gave us a real grounding in hard work and working together to keep it going. And he's still at 96 out in that garden providing for his family, and he has some of the best vegetables that I can't go down and find them anywhere.
Well, you just showed me an orange that's bigger than the softball your high school team plays with.
Yeah, yeah. He's a master at raising things, and he's passed that legacy on to us as kids and grandkids, and the love of having your vegetables and your fresh fruits and stuff.
Did you know much about his World War II service when you were growing up?
No, Dad never talked about that. Very quiet about World War II until we got into college and there were some projects that had to be done. And you know, you start talking and he never really shared too much. And then one day I asked him, I said, Dad, if you don't share, our generation and your grandkids coming along, they're not going to know. And then when we started having children, the grandkids started asking and watching the old war movies together, and they started asking. And then it just became, you've got to tell your story. You've got to let us know so that we know what the sacrifices your age group made through our history lessons. And then slowly, as I got into teaching, and there were some projects our high school history teacher, Mr. Hinton, was doing research. And I said, a young lady that went to Lovina and wanted to do a story on him, and I said, well, go ask him. Came home and I said, she's going to come ask you to tell your story. And, well, I don't want to get into all that. And then slowly he started telling us more and more, and as the grandkids have grown, the stories have become more and more. But he's always very private about that part of himself.
With what he has shared, is there an element of his story that really makes an impression on you?
I just think the everyday. I mean, Dad was never flashy about it. It just, the everyday, just like every other person that was called to service, I think Dad went into the times that he was called. He did his job. He did his job as a team. And I think the good Lord put him in situations like being late for the train, like volunteering. And I think he had his hand watching him all these years. And I think that's, at 96, he's just amazing what he's gone through with his physical health. And I think he's a blessing for us and our family, and just very proud of all that he did to help this country. And he's just one little piece of the big American puzzle, that every man had a job, a woman had a job in the war, even the people on the home front. My grandfather served on the home front making munitions. And so I think that's the biggest thing that I appreciate from Dad is, you know, not a big splash, but just that every day works hard and takes care of his family and does the right thing.
When Leroy got to visit the National World War II Memorial with Central Valley Honor Flight, his son Ken got to go with him.
Yes, I did. Been on quite a few trips, not boasting. Obviously, a lot of those trips, because my dad mom worked so hard, allowed my sister and I to go on several trips in the 4-H and FFA. But I can honestly say, Paul, that was probably the best trip I've ever been on in my life. Seeing those men be honored for their service to our country was unbelievable. An unbelievable trip. Just how they opened the roads and the sirens and people stopped and I can't remember the gentleman's name, motorcycle cop, Officer Jones, I believe is what his name. They called him Moses because as you were going down, Pennsylvania Avenue, they said he just parted the cars and these buses with these veterans came through, and it was just tear-jerking just to see that. But just to see these men being honored for their service to our country was wonderful.
Did you learn anything about your dad in that experience that maybe you didn't realize before?
Well, as my sister said earlier, there were times Dad didn't talk a whole lot until just recently about his service to our country, mainly because he came back and went back to work. And I know we hear a lot of PTSD and all the different things that the men bring home. And I know that is out there, and I know it's very real, but it seems like in World War II, these men came home and went, they had to feed their families. They had to go to work. So that's probably a reason why he didn't talk about it. He got home and had to go to work. He stayed busy. But I learned some stories and some things that he had never talked about, and was able to communicate with him a little bit on that. And just it reinforced the fact that how blessed I am to have a father like him. And there's no doubt, as my sister said earlier, there's no doubt in my mind God's providence was with my dad. He took care of him, brought him home. Otherwise, we wouldn't be here today. So, but I do remember at the World War II Memorial, we were talking about all the stars there. And he said, there's a lot of men that didn't make it home like I did. So I think that was eye-opening to him to see that too.
We are out of time here on the radio, but if you access the podcast version of this episode, number 662, at hometownheroesradio.com, you can enjoy a few more of Leroy Tucker's World War II memories. Adding more evidence to that case, our veterans and their stories present here every week those powerful reminders that our freedom is not free.
To let Paul know about a veteran in your life, visit hometownheroesradio.com and click on Suggest a Veteran. Today's program has been brought to you by Provident Payments. Give your business the edge only their personalized service can deliver at providentpayments.com.